The question isn't will they, the question is when they do, how long will it last? Well, hello there, my friends. Rafi here from the Endgame Investor with this week's Silver Report for Arcadia Economics. And things are starting to break down in the currency markets. We're getting closer to war. What kind of war exactly? Nobody knows, but we're definitely getting closer to war. And looks like Biden isn't doing too well after the amazing presidential debate. And who knows if he's going to be replaced or who is he going to be replaced with? All kinds of political upheavals in Europe. And meanwhile, the metals are calm, but bank reserves are dropping. Repo volume is increasing. We have hit 60% of bank reserves taken up by repos. Remember, the repocalypse happened at about 87%. So we could be weeks, probably months away from that point being hit. Bank reserves hit a new low for the year, and Shanghai silver premiums remain above 10% for the longest period ever recorded, which isn't that long of a period, but it's still the longest period ever recorded. In a word, the world is not calming down. It is getting more frenetic. By the way, this Silver Report is brought to you by Fortuna Mining. Symbol FSM. They got rid of the silver in the title, but not the S in the symbol, so we're still at FSM. Fortuna, latest news, intersects 31.3 grams of gold per ton, over 12 meters from the Kara prospect at the Diamba Sud gold project in Senegal. So this is one in development. And it's good to see that they have a very viable mine in development here as they continue with their projects at Séguéla, which is now in full production. Here we have Paul Wheaton, Senior Vice President of Exploration of Fortuna, commented, drilling at Karakara continues to improve our understanding of the prospect's potential, returning several high-grade intercepts, including a highlight intersection of 31.3 grams per ton gold over an estimated true width of 12 meters. If you go down here on the press release, you can see the highlights. We have even here an 87 gram per ton over an estimated true width of 1.6 meters from 34 meters. Karakara is full of gold, it seems. We'll see where this goes on the next phase of production as they complete the drill hole program. And as the West continues to break down politically, culturally, etc., I find it a breath of fresh air that Fortuna is now concentrating in Africa, where none of this cultural rot appears to be taking place, at least not directly. But that's a side point. Let's continue with this week's Silver Report brought to you by Fortuna Mining, symbol FSM. Well, we got a lot to get into today, so let's start with something I haven't really reported on ever on the Silver Report, but you always need something new, and that is the Chicago PMI, Purchasing Managers Index. This is a proxy for economic growth in the Chicago area in Central North America, Central United States, right, Central United States. We have here the Chicago PMI going back to 1968. And the red line is where I put the current read of, what is it, 35 or something like that, or something really, anything below 50 is contraction. So two things you can notice about this chart is that we've been below 50 for the most amount of months in a row, excluding this one month. I think that was like a few months ago, maybe in April or May or something. But excluding this, I think we're 21 months in a row in contraction. That is the longest contraction ever in the history of this index. Here is the lockdowns. You got a reading of, what was it, 29? I can't really tell the numbers here, but the only times when we have lower than we are now, meaning more in contraction than we are now, was during the lockdowns when moving around was illegal and doing anything was illegal because we were saving the planet, and thank God it worked and there were no negative side effects to lockdowns and everything was perfect. Okay, we also have the 2008 Great Financial Crisis, where we had lower reads than we have now for about 4 or 5 months in that period. And the time before that was 1981, 1982. And that double dip recession around when gold was at going to record highs and silver hit 50 for the first time. This is a pretty extraordinary number. It means that the industrial economy is really crashing in the central region of the United States, or Midwest is what they call it, whatever Chicago is technically called, who cares? And it's clear signs that the next and final official recession is gaining steam. It's been gaining steam for a while. When will it be in full bloom? I can't tell you that, but I can tell you the signs are all building up. It's going to be a big one, and it's going to lead to the last monetary printing round, I think, ever. But we'll see if I'm right. Pending home sales. Why am I going to this? Because we're at a new all-time low in pending home sales. Pending home sales all-time low means banks are stuck with mortgages, is the point I want to make here. So circled here, you have the housing crash of 2008. That is when pending home sales hit a low of about 80,000, I think that number is. The last one was 70.8, which is actually for the first time since the lockdowns lower than the lockdown low in 2020 of whatever that number was. We're lower now. So we're building fewer houses now than we were when it was illegal to do anything. That tells you something about the housing market. Nobody's selling homes in a pending manner. Why, what does that tell you about prices? Well, why aren't prices falling if pending home sales are as low as they ever been? Because people have these low rate mortgages that they locked in at low interest rates, and they don't want to get rid of them because interest rates are going up. And if they were to buy a new house, they would have to refinance the higher interest rates. So they're just holding onto the interest rates. And who is getting hurt because of that? Well, it's the banks that own the mortgages, which means you're going to have some banking trouble at some point, probably very soon. We've been below the housing crash numbers pretty consistently since 2023 now. I don't know how much longer this can last, but it can't be forever, people. I know that for sure. Shanghai silver premiums. We'll talk about silver for a second. So I zoomed in here. For the first time, Gold Charts Russ is making it available so I can zoom in on 2024. I don't know why that hasn't been available until now, but now that I can see it, I can show you that we've been above the 10% premium line. The black line is what I drew in here. 10% premium Shanghai over New York. Pretty much the entire year, excluding like a few weeks, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. It looks like 2 weeks between March and April, we've been above 10%, and we've been above 8.5% basically the entire year. And if you zoom out, you can see that this has never really happened before. The only times we've been above 10% is very, very briefly for like a few days during these periods, and a slightly longer period, maybe a week or so, maybe 2 weeks in late 2014, as silver was finding its final lows. This is something else, though. This is sustained Chinese demand from Shanghai. Exactly what is fueling it, I can't tell you. I'm hoping it's silver stacking, but it's probably a combination of different things. Since these premiums are being sustained, it means that there is a sustained change in the silver market as Chinese people are relating to silver in a different way now. I wanted to comment on this Zero Hedge tweet. Mostly, I agree with it, but there's one point that I want to correct here in the Zero Hedge tweet. So, the yen, we're going to talk about the yen now. The yen, as we know, broke through 161 this morning. New low, we'll get into that in a second. So, yen weaker than lira and peso in 2024. So, this is the performance of different currencies, different international currencies versus the dollar year to date 2024. The worst performing one is the yen. It is worse than the Argentine peso, which is a country in hyperinflation. It looks like Javier Milei might have mitigated that a bit with his libertarian policies. We'll see if it follows through. Still, the Turkish lira has been hanging around where it's been versus the dollar for 2024, but that country has been in a jogging hyperinflation for years, I think 2 or 3 years now, and the Japanese yen is doing worse than them. So the tweet says, and the latter part of the tweet, the best part is once you finally contain it, it's talking about the Bank of Japan to the yen. Once you finally contain the currency crisis in the yen, you have a bond market crash to look forward to. I slightly disagree with that assessment, and here's why. This is the next chart here. So it says yen weakness directly correlated with Japanese bond weakness. We can see here, and I've gone through this a few times, I just want to hammer home, it's so important, and so few people understand this, that the weaker the bond market is, the weaker the yen is. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. How this contradicts what Zero Hedge is saying in its tweet is once you contain the currency crisis, then you have a bond market crisis. But no, Once you have a bond market crisis, you also have a currency crisis. They happen at the same time because the yen is the bond market, because the Bank of Japan owns so many bonds. That's what the yen is. So as the bond market unravels, so does the currency. There is no way to strengthen the yen at this point. If you hike rates, if the Bank of Japan hikes rates, let's say 4 or 5% to get rid of the spread between the dollar and the yen, then the yen collapses anyway because the bonds on its balance sheet collapse in value, and so does the purchasing power of the yen. Here is the chart of the yen, and I want to show you the technical situation we're in now. This is quite interesting. So I think the latest numbers on this is not 160.94. I think it's 161.1 or something like that. Whatever, we broke through 161. This is above the 1990 low here. Remember, the higher this is, the lower the yen is. This is the amount of yen it takes to buy a dollar. The final support here, that might not even be a support because it's so blippy. It's very, very tenuous over here, is 163.29 in October 1986. So 163.29, we had one blip. And then after that, we pretty much have no support until we hit this line over here, this dashed line of 189.45. So the 163 I'm getting from this number over here, where I moused over it and I froze the screen. So we have 163 and then 189.45. There's basically nothing between 163.3 and 189.45. So once you break through 163, which could be in the next few days, it could be imminently, we could head towards 189.45. And none of this precludes that the Bank of Japan won't intervene here. They still have cash to intervene. The question isn't will they, the question is when they do, how long will it last? A few days, a few weeks, a month, who knows? And what number are they waiting for? I have a hunch it might be 163.3 here, the final support zone, when they might smash it and then get the yen back into the 150s somewhere. And then we can, maybe a few weeks, maybe a month later, we can start heading towards 189.5. We'll see what happens. How is this affecting the Japanese consumer prices? You can't see the bar on this chart here, but I put the line where the latest read is. This is month over month consumer prices. I don't like calling inflation because it's just the effect of inflation. So I said here, Japan consumer prices advanced 0.5%, second highest reading post-COVID era. So 0.5%, there's only one, two, three times. We've hit that number since I think this is 2008, maybe 2007. And if you want to go back one, two, three, four times since the Asian financial crisis, somewhere in there, this is a very, very high read. This is close to record territory here. And we very rarely get through this, only once since the COVID era. If the yen keeps falling, which I think it will, we will head toward higher in Japanese consumer prices, which will force the BOJ, the Bank of Japan, to hike rates on its bonds, which will crash the bond market, which will make the yen even weaker. There's no way out here. There just isn't. This final chart, this is the percentage of bank reserves taken up by repos. We are up to about 60%. We were at 55, 56% last week. We've jumped 4% to 60%. And the repocalypse, the major financial crisis of 2019, happened around here at 85%, when repos took about 85% of bank reserves. Bank reserves fell to 33.26 trillion, I believe. And they're going to keep falling as quantitative tightening continues. And really, there you have it, folks. The yen is crumbling. Silver premiums remain high. The price has calmed down. Gold and silver haven't moved much in the last 2, 3 weeks. But we're getting ready for the next leg up. Exactly when, I can't tell you, but it's going to happen. But the real leg up won't happen until after the final financial crisis, which we are getting closer and closer to. I am watching the percentage of bank reserves taken up by repos. That will tell me when we have run out of dollars in the sewage system, in the monetary sewage system. And then we should begin the final round of printing. If you enjoyed this silver report, then please sign up to the Endgame Investor on Substack. And if you want extracurricular stuff, become my patron on Patreon for as little as $3 a month to get spiritual lessons in the monetary field. This is Rafi, the Endgame Investor, with this week's Silver Report for Arcadia Economics, and I'll see you guys next week.
Well, thank you, Rafi, as always, for this week's Silver Report. And thank you to everyone who has been out there watching, joining us for all the shows we've had this week. Hope you've had a great week out there, and like to make a special note to one of our friends in the audience who is part of an event this weekend to raise money for pediatric cancer care, which actually remains the leading cause of death by disease among children in America. And our dear friend Colin Gooch, a longtime Arcadia watcher and friend of the show, is part of an event this weekend where they're going to be playing golf for 24 straight hours to raise money for pediatric cancer research. And just wanted to wish Colin congratulations as he gets ready to play for 24 hours and also let people know what he's doing. And he sent over a short video of what they'll actually be up to this weekend, and we'll play a bit of that right now.
So we are team. You cannot judge a team by its height. And my name's Mike. This is Chayton and Matt. We'll be out here for 24 hours.
24.
24 hours. It's just a little give back from all the players here to the kids that battle like Chayton and fight so hard. It's a long day, but it's worth the fight.
There's so many kids that need our help, and this is just one way that we can raise money for cancer kids and the research that's so desperately needed.
There are people out there and families out there that deal with the unimaginable every single day. This group knows to not take that for granted, and so every little thing we can do to help out, we're willing to do.
This is personal for me, as my nephew had pediatric brain tumors when he was 5, so this is a very special event for me, and the more we can do to raise awareness with kilts and skirts, but also raise money and just let them know that we care and that we're here to support them.
So again, congratulations to Colin. If you would like to find out more or consider supporting their efforts as they're out there for 24 hours this Saturday, the link to that is in the description field below. Thanks to Colin for being out there doing good things in the world. Hope you're all getting set for a great weekend. Appreciate you, and we will see you again next week.